This is the Seed Podcast, episode 58, The Power of Language.
This is the podcast where we honor your potential for infinite growth and practice unselfish self-care so that you can become the very best version of you. This is the Seed Podcast, and I am your host, Jessica Croker.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing? It's spring. I spent this morning kind of reading and writing in my journal and just watching the birds and listening to all the new twittery sounds. We've had a pretty fun spring here. I'm really just so blessed to live where I do and have the life that I have. I have such fun children, and my husband has been home a lot because of the social distancing and all of the stay-at-home orders. And so we've had a lot of time to spend together as a family. And we live in the woods in Virginia and have almost 3 acres of land, and most of our land is just wooded and wild. And so my husband and boys have been hard at work every day that it's not pouring rain, creating a mountain bike park in our woods. And they've got crazy jumps and balance beams on logs, and we've got some fallen trees, we've got some rock formations, and all sorts of fun things to try to ride our bikes over. Well, they like to ride their bikes over. I do ride their little trail that they've made. It's almost half a mile, which is pretty fun. And I've run it a few times, just done some laps. There's lots of variation in hills, and routes and things to go over. Anyway, it's been really fun and kind of a treasure. My oldest son is a senior in high school and getting ready to fly away, probably serving an LDS mission soon. We're just working on paperwork, and things are up in the air with all of the changes that happen, it seems, every day with the state of the world and what feels safe, what feels responsible, and what the leaders think we need to do. And so he's working on his papers, and maybe he'll go away on a mission soon. And I also have my oldest daughter has been planning on getting married, and all of those kinds of things are just in flux. But we've had so much fun just having time to be together as a family. So I'm thankful for that. I hope that you've been able to find some bright silver linings in this time. I know that I am super fortunate because my husband's job, I mean, he works for the military. He is in the Air Force, and so there's a lot of security in that his job is not going to go away. But I know that there's so much insecurity in the world, and I hope that all of us just are aware of and do what we can to support food banks and support our friends that need that, that we buy products from people that make things, that we support little restaurants and those kinds of things to help them get through this time. I know it's temporary and it won't last forever, but it can be scary to face the unknown, and we need to do what we can to help others. So that's my little introduction here. During this time, I've also been teaching a lot of yoga online and had a lot of fun. And I've put together finally my Befriending Your Body course, which will be just a membership program, kind of a yoga studio housed on my website. And by the time this episode goes live, registration should be open for that. And it will be really inexpensive, but there will be live yoga classes where you can join in via Zoom, and you'll have access to all of the recordings. But we'll really focus on creating a meaningful relationship with your body, really reverencing and honoring the gift that you have, and transforming the relationship that you have with your body. And so I just ask you to kind of think about what that is. How do you talk about your body and your mind? And if that needs a little bit of an adjustment, I would love to help you with that. So you can go to my website, jessicacroker.com, and you can sign up there to get access to some of the classes that I've been teaching over the past few weeks. We've had a really fun format. I'll teach a flow, just a movement class. And we've also started doing something called Movement Lab, where I really just watch everyone that's participating and we dive deep into a specific area of concern. And so we did a workshop about the pelvic floor and really felt all of the ways that we can support and find space for that area of our body that's so vital for us. And we're just going to keep going with that exploration. And anyway, it's really fun and was a really powerful class. And so I hope you'll join us for those kinds of things. Just go to jessicacroker.com and the registration form will be there. Okay, so this is what I want to talk today about today. I want to talk about the power of language. It's such an interesting thing, right? It's something that develops and changes over time. You know, in our own lifetimes, our grasp of language and our use of language evolves and changes, but even over the course of human history, it changes. When we read the King James Version of the Bible as a family, right, that language is a lot different. I've studied Shakespeare with my kids often, and that language is a lot different than what it is that we use today, even though it was all English, right? But language allows us to communicate, right? And it enables us to record our thoughts, to read the thoughts of others. It allows us to define things and describe things and make things a part of our inner life. And we use language to think. Especially in our adult experience, we have an inner dialogue or just a voice in our heads that talks words almost constantly. And for many of us, our inner experience is almost completely made of words. But I want you to think back to little babies. I know you probably can't remember you being a little baby, and it's the development of language, right, that enables us to have memories. But if you're a parent, you can probably think back to your own little babies. When we're born, we have no language. So we don't have an inner experience that's constantly narrated in words, but we certainly have an inner experience, right? It's pretty intense because everything is new and it's filled with sensation and with comfort and discomfort and pleasure and pain. But without language, our ability to communicate and to make sense of our experiences is really limited. Then we start learning to name things, right? We find words for things that are most important to us, like mama or baba, or animal sounds, right? And these labels help our brains have something to hold on to create memories with, and to analyze and find relationships and make comparisons among things in the world around us. It enables us to learn and progress. Our use of language builds our brains. And as I've been thinking about this, I go back to my experience with my first baby, my oldest child. Her first word was duck. And when she was born, we lived in Logan, Utah. That's where we were going to college, at Utah State University. And she learned to walk pretty young. You know, she was 9.5 months when she started walking, and she seemed so big, and I would take her. I remember taking her to the zoo, the Logan Zoo, which was just a park, really, that had some bird enclosures. You know, they're bigger. You know, there were just like fenced in areas. There were pheasants, and there was a raven that could talk. There were just different kinds of birds, really, in kind of cages in this park zoo. But there also was an enclosure, like a fenced in area, that had wallabies, which were great fun to watch, that just hopped around. But I just remember taking her to the zoo and her toddling down the sidewalks there, the pathways, and there was a canal and kind of a pond area. And she started to say duck. Like, I showed her the ducks and I said duck, and she could say that. That was a sound that she could make. Duck, duck, duck. And it was easy to say. And she just toddled around the park paths with her little chubby hand. Like, it just seemed like a little ball with a pointer finger sticking out. And she was just pointing at the noisy ducks in the water and just thrilled with her newfound ability to respond to their quacks with a very cute and confident duck, duck, duck. So when we got home after her first discovery of her new word duck, she pulled out a floppy stuffed animal from her bin, and it was a mallard duck. Like, she had made that connection. Oh, I saw this and I have one. And he became her favorite stuffed animal. He was her comfort item because she had a word for him. Of all her little toys, this one was the most hers because she had a word for it. And pretty soon, anytime we were outside, she'd get her little pointer finger out again and point at anything with feathers and wings, saying, duck, duck. She had a word, and she started being able to make comparisons and notice her prior experience and how what she saw was informed, and she could put a name to it. It was so fun to watch. Her first word had given her more awareness of the world around her and allowed her to make, to find those similarities and categorize an interface with the world. Developing language is so powerfully liberating for our brains, and it profoundly affects how we interact with others, the world around us, and ourselves. So, have you ever heard about the ancients and the color blue? In Homer's Odyssey, he refers often to the wine-dark sea. He describes the sheep as violet. And then sometimes red and yellow are mentioned, but never ever the color blue. And the philosopher William Gladstone in 1858 kind of noticed this, and he counted the color references in the Odyssey. And later, Lazarus Geiger continued this research, and he found the same thing in ancient Hebrew and Chinese and Japanese, and even the Vedic languages like Sanskrit in India. the only ancient language they found with a word for blue was Egyptian, because the Egyptians had a way to make blue dye. So they needed a word to describe it. But the ancient Greeks, the ancient Chinese, they didn't have a word for blue. But the crazy thing is, like, all these people had the same sky, right? They all had the sky, but no one described it as blue until they had a word for blue. And I find this so interesting. Are we limited to what we can describe in words? And what does that say about our capacity to experience things? I just can't even imagine not knowing or being able to describe the sky as blue, or not being able to distinguish it as uniquely different from other things around me. Language does amazing things to enrich and deepen our experience. And it also creates a lens through which we see the world. I've been reading a book called Braiding Sweetgrass by an indigenous botanist named Robin Kimmerer. And she didn't grow up with her ancestral indigenous language, Potawatomi, but she writes about trying to learn it as an adult. And she laments that almost everything is a verb. In Potawatomi, the only nouns are man-made objects. Everything natural is being or has a state of being. So I just want to read this quote to you. She says, "Of an inanimate being, like a table, we say, 'What is it?' And we answer, 'Dapwen yue,' 'table it is.' But of apple, we must say, 'Who is that being?' And reply, 'Mishmin Yahweh, apple that being is.' Yahweh, the animate to be, I am, you are, she, he is. To speak of those possessed with life and spirit, we must say Yahweh. But what linguistic confluence do Yahweh of the Old Testament and Yahweh of the New World both fall from the mouths of the reverent? Isn't this just what it means to be, to have the breath of life within, to be the offspring of creation? The language reminds us in every sentence of our kinship with all of the animate world." Could you imagine seeing the world through that lens? That everything that has been alive is a being. It's so interesting and would really inform everything that we do and see and the way we think and feel. Language creates a vehicle for our thoughts, for the storage of our memories, and for the connections of ideas in our learning. We think in words, and those word thoughts create our emotions and internal experience and motivates the way we act and interact with the world. But this very thing that gives us so much power to expand our understanding can become a trap, a kind of straitjacket that locks us into limited understanding. Especially when, as adults, we start to get so caught up in the stories and constant stream of thought words that we forget that there is much more possible to experience beyond our words. Could you imagine missing out on the magnificence of the clear blue sky because you didn't have the word blue? What if you couldn't say that object is a tree, but you could only say that being is a tree? That is being a river. That is being a stone. So interesting. If everything was a verb, how would that change our experience? How does your thought stream of words liberate you? How does it limit you? Can you be aware of your inner and outer experience beyond words? Can you let go of words to first inhabit and get curious about your experience, then use words as a tool to bring more light and understanding to it? Are there experiences that the words you have may be incomplete or inadequate to describe, to fully integrate and understand? I know sometimes it just takes time to really be able to formulate the words or find the words that will help us bring some understanding and process experiences that we have. It's so important to consider in our emotional vocabulary, right? Just like the ancients were limited because their lack of a word for the color blue, we can be limited in the subtleties of our experience if we don't expand our emotional vocabulary. Can you use language to find the subtle richness of reality, to expand your capacity to be aware? Can language be a tool of curiosity that we can use to investigate and wonder? Like, what are the subtle differences between anxiety and anticipation, or comfort and contentment? My challenge to you is to get curious about your thought stream and the words your brain uses over and over again. And then expose yourself to new words and new perspectives. It's been so interesting for me just to operate with that lens of seeing everything as a verb, that things are being, that the Potawatomi language encapsulates, that a tree isn't just there, but it is being a tree. There's something there being a tree. There's something there being a river. It's never the same. It's always just being that thing in constant action and motion. So interesting. Notice sensations in your body and describe them with a curiosity and openness. See if you can find blue and all its variations. Okay, friends, thank you so much for joining me today. It's just so good to connect. I love hearing from you. So please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or connect with me on Instagram at seedpod_yoga. You can find me there, or go to jessicacroker.com and just sign up to get some of the free classes that I've been teaching over the past couple of weeks, or join the Befriending Your Body membership, where we'll practice yoga together, meditate together, journal, and really transform our relationship with our bodies. Have a wonderful week, and I will talk with you again soon.